From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Regional elections this past weekend in Argentina surprised many analysts with a strong showing by the opposition that is not characteristic for off-year elections in that country. For more on that, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. Well, an interesting election in Argentina with mixed results, and should be. They're holding up a stiff upper lip, but should be a little disappointing to President Macri, for sure.
Yeah, and the opposition media in Argentina and the government itself in Argentina are putting a very positive spin on what for them was really a mediocre result. They should have done better. Why do I say that? Because they got 42% of the vote. Now, all the results aren't in. I haven't seen a complete analysis of all the results yet. But there was a very good turnout, 80%. And the voting in Argentina is compulsory for people over 18. It's optional for people aged 16 and 17. So a high turnout. And if you compare that percentage of the vote with what happened in Venezuela's regional elections, for example, the government there, despite everything going against it, sanctions, violent disruption for months earlier this year, the economic difficulty, the drop in the oil price, all that stuff. And they still won with 54% of the vote. Now, in Argentina, it's true that there's an adverse economic climate, but only for the poorer sections of the population. The middle class seem to be doing fine. And that, of course, Argentina is a much more prosperous country than Venezuela, so in social economic terms, in terms of its general population. Although there have been mass protests against Macri's austerity measures, and there have been mass protests against his increasing repression, that are embodied in these two iconic cases, like the forced disappearance of Santiago Maldonado, whose body was finally discovered after something like 70 days, in a place where the authorities had already combed the river twice and perhaps three times previously. Suddenly it appeared, his body. And they're in the process of conducting an exhaustive autopsy because it's such a controversial case in Argentina. Mm. And the other iconic case is that of Milagros Salas, the indigenous rights activist and workers activist of the grouping known as Tupac Amaru, who's in jail on what for reasons that aren't clear. She hasn't actually been clearly sentenced, but she's been something like 2 years in jail. And she's been suffering really egregious maltreatment, in terms of, in administrative terms, being refused medical attention and stuff like that. So those two cases have been working against the image of Mauricio Macri's government. But despite that, their vote held up. In the primaries that were held, what was it, 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, something like that?
Weeks, yeah.
Argentina has these primary elections, these compulsory primary elections. And in those elections, in the province of Buenos Aires, Cristina Fernandez actually beat the official candidate. And that gave the government the heebie-jeebies. They took very vigorous measures to try and turn that around, which they did successfully, because their candidate won by something. I think they got something in the end. They'll have got something like 4 or 5% advantage over Cristina Fernandez.
Yeah.
And under the rules of Argentina's Senate, these elections in Argentina, the winning party gets two senators. And the party that comes second gets one senator. So Cristina Fernandez was elected. Now, that in itself, her election to the Senate, is a serious setback for Mauricio Macri, no matter how they spin it. Because for the past 2 years, Mauricio Macri has mobilized all his resources, all his very formidable media allies, especially the Clarín group, against Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner. His allies, his right-wing allies in Argentina, suspiciously organized judicial power. They've engaged in maneuvers, very, very questionable legal maneuvers against Cristina Fernandez, manipulating the administrative rules of the judicial system.
Yeah, it's very political. You can see what's been, you know, it's obvious to people going on that they're gunning for her and that they've got allies in the judiciary that aren't concerned about facts or law, just politics.
Right. So, so despite that, the same judicialization of public life that we've seen in Brazil, despite that very serious attack on the integrity and of Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, she still got elected to the Senate.
Right, the highest office available, she won, despite everything.
Right. So, and that in itself is really important, especially when you take into account that the opposition was divided. Now, in Argentina, you've got a situation that's quite similar to the situation in Venezuela, but in reverse, where you've got a unified, well-integrated right-wing coalition called Cambiemos, but they're still only able to mobilize 42% of the vote. Whereas against them, you have a very divided opposition where Cristina Fernandez has managed to put together a coalition that has been able to get 37% of the vote in the elections for the Senate in Buenos Aires. And I think overall nationally, over 30% in the elections for the lower house, the House of Deputies. Now, perhaps we should explain to people listening that Argentina is a country that's divided into 23 provinces plus the autonomous city district of Buenos Aires.
Right.
Now, the province of Buenos Aires itself is divided into the city of Buenos Aires, which has a population of around 3 million, something like that. The metropolitan area, which is an area of various conurbations, I think there are actually dozens of conurbations, with a total population of 10 million. And the province of Buenos Aires itself has a population of, 15 million, 16 million, something like that. I think it's 16 million. And then if you look at that in terms of Argentina's national economy, and its demographics, that is over a third of Argentina's total population of around 44, 45 million people. And Buenos Aires, I think the province of Buenos Aires, contributes over half of Argentina's GDP, which just shows you how lopsided in political terms and how important in political terms the province, the metropolitan area, and the autonomous city of Buenos Aires are in Argentina's political life. So outside Buenos Aires, the two biggest provinces are Cordoba and Santa Fe. I think Santa Fe was also won by Macri's Cambiemos party. So And looking again, I'm doing a comparison again between Argentina and Venezuela, not just Venezuela, but most countries in Latin America. What you've got in political terms, in electoral terms, is a very solid block of support for the progressive parties. In Venezuela, it's something, 35 to 40%, something like that. And in Argentina, it's slightly less. It's around 30 to 35%. By contrast, for the right wing, they have a similar block of support, solid support, core support. And in Venezuela, it's slightly less than the core support of the United Socialist Party of Venezuela. In Argentina, they're pretty much similar. They have pretty much similar support, say 30 to 35% on both sides.
Right.
So that means that there's a floating block of voters that are up for grabs by both sides. And in Venezuela, in the recent Venezuelan elections, thanks to abstention by the opposition supporters, and the government was able to mobilize its support and win a certain amount of support from the kind of independent or neutral voters,
right,
enough to give it that win of 54%. Now, I think it's really significant that Macri, despite all his advantages, and when they got into power, they quadrupled the amount of money that they spent on publicity for the government.
Mm.
He had virtually all, in fact, all the main corporate media were on his side. He had the advantage of a very popular governor in Buenos Aires, I think her name's Vidal, whose policies have been very successful from the point of view of the population of Buenos Aires. So they had all those advantages. And even so, they were only able to get 42% of the vote. Now, what does that mean in electoral terms? I may be wrong about this, but my reading of this is that they got core support of about 30 to 35%. They mobilized something like 10% of the neutral or independent voters to get their total of 42%. Now, that means that when it comes to the presidential election in 2 years' time, and if Mauricio Macri, as I expect, has not been able to live up to his promises of economic prosperity, I think people in Argentina are going to find that their standard of living continues to decline overall, especially the most impoverished sectors. And if Cristina Fernandez remains prominent in political life, which isn't guaranteed because, for one thing, her health isn't great, and for another thing, we don't know how this judicialization, this judicial political attack against her is going to pan out over the next year, 18 months. But if she's still prominent in public life for the 2019 elections, and if, as I suspect, Mauricio Macri's austerity policies continue to fail, as they have done so far, he's only been able to maintain a semblance of economic normality by generating public debt to cover the deficit that his failed policies have created,
right,
in the public sector. Now, that's not going to pan out well over the next couple of years. So all the signs are from these legislative elections, and it should be pointed out that no sitting government, except I think the government of Fernando de la Rúa way back, whenever it was in the early 2000s, I think in the middle of the crisis, the dreadful Argentine crisis,
right,
of 2000,
2001,
2002.
Right.
No sitting government has ever lost the legislative elections in Argentina. And the fact that Macri has only won them with that margin of, it's
barely.
Not a great margin, is not a good sign for him. And
no.
I should imagine that they're quite worried about what that means.
Yeah, the turnout was almost as big as in the presidential election 2 years ago. It was just shy of 80%, according to records yesterday, and it was like 82% for the presidential election in 2015. So, you know, it's like having an off-year election in the United States with turnout similar to a presidential election, only none of our elections approach 80% turnout. Also, you know, so you're looking, though, at you know, what happened, you know, in both houses of the legislature. You know, in the Senate, now the coalition, Macri's party, has 41%. The Front has 36.5%, but also the Justicialists have another 5.1%. So they're at par, pretty much. And then
I think in the Senate, and the overall majority of the opposition remains intact. Macri made minor advances in terms of numbers.
He got like one extra senator, I think.
They're still 21 senators short of a majority.
Right.
Right. So, and likewise
in the Chamber of Deputies, you have 42.1 for the ruling party, for Macri's party, and you've got 30.7 and 5.5. So, 36, 37% there, plus the left is 6%, almost 5.9%.
Listeners may be puzzled about why, if the government got 42% and the opposition something over 30%, well, why haven't they then got a majority in the two houses in the legislature? And that we should explain that only around half, or not even half, of the seats in the Senate and the lower house were up for election. And there were elections for 24 senators, depending on which outlet you read. Telesaur reported that the elections were for 24 senators, but the Nodal website reported that the elections were for 25 senators.
Right.
But that kind of number. And then in the House of Deputies, the elections were for a total of 127 out of something well over what? Around 500, I think. Something like that. So then, what that means is that it doesn't really reflect what might happen in full blown legislative elections, and it's a kind of indicator to what might happen in the presidential elections. In terms of the provinces, because the provincial authorities were also up for election, as I understand it. And if you look at that, then it's kind of half and half. And if you look at in terms of the opposition, which is divided, and the government under Cambiemos, and if you look at the map, if you go to Telesur or Nodal or any of the other websites reporting on these elections, they'll give you a map showing that around half the 23 provinces plus the city of Buenos Aires went to Cambiemos, and the other half went to the opposition. But the key thing in Argentina is that the opposition is divided. And as we've commented in the past about that division, divided opposition, the kind of social democrat centrist bloc under Sergio Massa, whom you'd think would be opposed to the government of Mauricio Macri, have in fact assisted Macri's legislative program over the last couple of years, and they're likely to continue to do so.
Right.
And that reflects a similar phenomenon to what we see in Venezuela, where the opposition just can't agree. They dislike each other so much that the only thing that they can agree on in Venezuela is getting rid of Nicolas Maduro.
Right.
Now, we haven't quite reached that point in Argentina, but we may well do over the next couple of years.
Yeah, it looks like it. Just I checked while we were talking. You got 72 seats in the Senate and 257 seats in the Chamber of Deputies.
Yes. So. Thanks, Don.
Yeah, no problem.
So then, the over the next 2 years across the region, and there are going to be elections in Brazil. Of course, we have the elections coming up in Chile in, November the 19th, round?
Yeah, next
That's
month.
Almost certain to go to a second round.
Yeah.
And then in 2018, we have the elections sometime in July for Brazil. We have elections at the end of next year in Venezuela, I think. And then in 2019, we have this important election in Argentina.
Right. Yeah, the whole, question of... Well, it's not a question of the claim of a conservative restoration versus a pink, perhaps red tide. You're going to see a lot of, you're going to see the tide come in and out a few times, I think, over the next 2 years.
I don't think either that pink tide or the conservative restoration make any sense at all in terms of their power to explain what's going on.
Right, I agree completely.
You're talking about 500 years of... genocide, enslavement, colonization,
Yep.
Bitter independence struggles, you know, and it's
600 it's million just, people, however many, a dozen and a half nation states, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These cartoon imagery just, it doesn't work, you know. It's much more
and these are very complicated processes, and they all point towards an increasing tendency for the majority in Latin America and the Caribbean to insist on emancipatory processes that enable them to realize that again to enable them to realize their full potential.
Right.
And against that, you have a right-wing elites and oligarchies who mobilize all their resources to try and hang on desperately to their unjustified power and privilege.
Yep.
With the backing of the United States and Europe, it has to be said.
Which are both trying to do exactly that same thing, to hang on to their, you know, their right of conquest, whatever rights the Pope bestowed on them 500 years ago, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, access to resources, essentially.
That's what it really is, right.
Access and control of Latin America's huge resources. Now,
right.
There are, within that, you get these kind of... What might fairly be described as contradictory phenomena, like, for example, Bolivia, Ecuador, and Peru are engaged in, regardless of the political complexion of their governments. Evo Morales is outright committed to socialism. In Ecuador, you've got this weird situation where Lenin Moreno, who is elected on the strength of his commitment to the program, the strongly social democrat, socialist inclined program of his Alianza País party, which was built up by the previous president, Rafael Correa. You have this weird situation where Lenin Moreno is shifting towards a more social democrat centrist
right.
position trying to make a rapprochement with the right-wing Ecuadorian opposition.
Right.
For example, Guillermo Lasso, who I think was the presidential candidate for the opposition, who lost to Lenin Moreno, he is welcoming Lenin Moreno's initiative for a referendum to change the constitution. Why is he welcoming it? Because it will bar Rafael Correa from running as a candidate in future presidential elections.
Right.
Guillermo Lasso, the right-wing opposition leader, has gone so far as to say that Lenin Moreno's referendum, and this is our initiative, he said.
Right.
So you've got an extreme right-wing opposition leader in Ecuador taking ownership of initiative by somebody who was elected on the platform of Rafael Correa.
Yep.
But anyway, and that's so be that as it may, and Ecuador is also engaged in integrationist initiatives with Peru. And Peru, of course, is run by this guy Kuczynski, who's a kind of right-wing technocrat historically, who only very, very narrowly beat Keiko Fujimori, the daughter of the former dictator Alberto Fujimori in Peru.
Right.
But they're engaged in various talks and agreements about regional integration, economic integration, very important from the point of view of Bolivia, and very important from the point of view of Latin America's shift towards China and away from being so dependent on the United States. Now, you can look at that as Latin America diversifying the way its resources are extracted, if you want to take an uncharitable view, so that instead of all their resources being extracted and sent off very ridiculously cheap prices to North America and Europe, they're now getting sent off at slightly better prices to China. And that's one way of looking at it. But another way of looking at it is that from the point of view of what is the reality of that relationship, there's a much stronger interchange of technological know-how between the Asian countries and Latin America than there ever was between North America and Europe and Latin America.
Well, I mean, first, so, there's already just the fact of having another possible trading partner to do business with structurally changes the relationship with the United States and Europe. And then there's the actual nature of this relationship that China offers with, you know, their slogan, win-win, does describe something material, which is quite distinct from the let's loot and run off with the resources model of the last 500 years of Europe and then the United States towards the region. And so, you know, when you see this thing operating in the background, and China will say, of course, we don't care what kind of government you have or how you guys run your country, we want to do business, it's actually quite true that it doesn't matter. In the background, not only are they changing the price for these resources, but also the currency. Yeah, but also the currency, which is that, you know, we get development and, you know, positive social benefits for doing business with you as opposed to for doing business with them.
Yeah, and here in Nicaragua, we have a very good example of that. And perhaps we can talk a little bit about Nicaragua later on if you've got time.
We've got about 3 minutes.
A very good example here in Nicaragua is that Nicaragua has developed its relationships with Southeast Asian countries. It hasn't developed, despite the initiative of the Interoceanic Canal, it hasn't as yet developed, that has yet to be made concrete. But what has been made concrete ever since Daniel Ortega returned to office back in January 2007 is the relationship between Nicaragua, Taiwan, South Korea. Right. It's developing its relationships with Vietnam and Thailand, interestingly enough.
Yep.
But in particular, its relationship with South Korea and Taiwan has been of enormous benefit technologically. Taiwan has given Nicaragua a very important input of agricultural technological know-how. And South Korea has given very important input in terms of information and communications technology, actually choosing Nicaragua out of all the Central American countries as the base for a regional college teaching people how to make the best use of broadband.
Wow.
So, you know, there's nothing like that from the United States.
Right.
Forget it. And there's kind of very low-level agricultural cooperation, and the United States' typical offer of help to improve democracy and all that nonsense that they use to justify their support, their interventionist support for opposition non-governmental sectors.
Right.
But by contrast, the Southeast Asian countries offer very concrete technological support, and that's happening across the region. And of course, in terms of China, going back to Peru, Ecuador, and Bolivia, you're also talking about massive infrastructure investment on the same scale as Nicaragua's Interoceanic Canal, which for the moment seems to have been shelved, in my view, largely because of the geopolitical opposition of the United States.
Mm. And perhaps just the current, you know, momentary condition of the global economy, it may have something to do with that. Not China per se, but in terms of demand for trade over, say, the next 5 years or 3 years or whatever that they, you know, factor into their calculus.
Yeah, so, going back to our discussion about Pink Tide and conservative restoration, there's an interesting fact for listeners that came out last week, and yet another poll indicating that Daniel Ortega and his vice president, Rosario Murillo, have levels of support of 79%.
Hmm. So that's pretty good, huh?
Well, so much for the conservative restoration. You know, it's just such nonsense, isn't it?
Yes, it is. All right, I guess we're going to have to leave it there. Next week we can pick up as we'll be getting closer to the elections in Chile, and we'll see things developing further in Venezuela and also the aftermath of yesterday's election in Argentina. Tony, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure and very enlightening as always.
Yeah, thanks a million, Don. Maybe we can talk about Colombia where things are not looking great.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we got to follow that up too. Okay, talk to you next week.
Thanks a million.
Thank you. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.